Chapter 11. Gregor awoke from a fitful sleep. Images of blood-red rivers, his dad surrounded by rats, and boots falling into bottomless caverns had woven in and out of his dreams all night long. Oh yeah, and then there was that warrior thing. He had tried to tell them. When Vicus had implied that he was the warrior in The Prophecy of Grey, Gregor had actually laughed. But the man was serious. "You've got the wrong guy," Gregor had said. "Really, I promise, I'm not a warrior." Why pretend and get their hopes up? Samurai warriors, Apache warriors, African warriors, medieval warriors. He'd seen movies. He'd read books. He didn't in any way resemble any warrior. First of all, they were grown-up, and they usually had a lot of special weaponry. Gregor was 11, and unless you counted a 2-year-old sister as special weaponry, he'd come empty-handed. Also, Gregor was not into fighting. He'd fight back if someone jumped him at school, but that didn't happen often. He wasn't all that big, but he moved fast, and people didn't like to mess with him. Sometimes he'd step in if a bunch of guys were pounding a small kid. He hated seeing that. But he never picked fights. And wasn't fighting what warriors mainly did? Vicus and Luxa had listened to his protests. He thought he might have convinced Luxa. She didn't have a very high opinion of him anyway. But Vicus was more persistent. "How many Overlanders survive the fall to the Underland, do you suppose?" "I would guess a tenth." "And how many survive the rats after that?" "Perhaps another tenth." "So, out of 1,000 Overlanders, let us say 10 survive. How passing strange is it that not only your father, but you and your sister came alive to us," said Vicus. "I guess it's kind of strange," admitted Gregor. "But I don't see why that makes me a warrior."
"You will when you better understand the prophecy," said Vicus. "Each person carries their own destiny. These walls tell of our destiny, and your destiny, Gregor, requires you to play a role in it."
"I don't know about this destiny thing," said Gregor. "I mean, my dad and Boots and I, we all have the same laundry room, and we landed somewhere pretty close to you, so I'm thinking it's more of a coincidence. I'd like to help, but you guys are probably going to have to wait a little longer for your warrior."
Vicus just smiled and said they would put it before the council in the morning. This morning. Now. Despite all of his worries, and he had plenty, Gregor couldn't deny a feeling of giddy happiness that shot through him periodically. His dad was alive! Almost instantly, another wave of anxiety would rush over him. Yeah, he's alive, but imprisoned by rats. Still, his grandma always said, "Where there's life, there's hope." Boy, wouldn't his grandma love it if she knew he was talked about in a prophecy. But of course, that wasn't him. That was some warrior guy who would hopefully make an appearance really soon and help him get his dad free. That was his main goal now. How could he rescue his dad? The curtain pulled open, and Gregor squinted at the light. Marith stood in the doorway. The swelling in his face had gone down, but his bruises were going to be there for a while. Gregor wondered if the guard was still angry with him, but Marith sounded calm. "Gregor the Overlander, the council requests your presence," he said. "If you make haste, you may wash and eat first." "Okay," said Gregor. He started to rise and realized Boots's head was cradled on his arm. He eased himself up without waking her.
"What about Boots?"
"She may sleep on," said Marith. "Dulcet will watch over her." Gregor bathed quickly and dressed in fresh clothes. Marith led him to a small room where a meal was laid out, then stood watch at the door. "Hey, Marith," he said, drawing the guard's attention. "How is everybody? I mean, Perdita and the bats, are they okay?
Perdita has woken finally. The bats will mend, said Marith evenly.
Oh, that's great, said Gregor with relief.
After his father's situation, the thing pressing most on him had been the condition of the Underlanders. He wolfed down bread, butter, and a mushroom omelet. He drank hot tea made of some sort of herb, and energy seemed to pour through him.
Are you ready to face the council? Asked Marith, seeing his empty plate.
All set, said Gregor, springing up.
He felt better than he had since he had reached the Underland. News of his dad, the Underlander's recovery, sleep, and food had revived him. The council, a group of a dozen older Underlanders, had gathered at a round table in a room off the high hall. Gregor saw Vicus and Solovet, who gave him an encouraging smile. Luxa was also there, looking tired and defiant. Gregor bet she'd been chewed out for joining the rescue party last night. He was sure she hadn't acted one bit sorry. Vicus introduced the people around the table. They all had funny-sounding names that Gregor immediately forgot. The council began to ask him questions. All kinds of things, like when he was born, and did he know how to swim, and what he did in the Overland. He couldn't figure out why a lot of the stuff was important. Did it really matter that his favorite color was green? But a couple of Underlanders were scribbling down every word he said like it was golden. After a while, the council seemed to forget he was there, and they argued among themselves. He caught phrases like, a son of the sun, and white water runs red, and knew they were talking about the prophecy. Excuse me, he finally broke in. I guess Vicus didn't tell you, but I'm not the warrior. Look, please, what I really need is for you guys to help me bring my dad home. Everyone at the table stared at him for a moment, and then began to talk with greater excitement. Now he kept hearing the words, follow his call. Finally, Vicus rapped on the table for order.
Members of the council, we must decide. Here sits Gregor the Overlander. Who counts him the warrior of the Prophecy of Grey?
10 of the 12 raised their hands. Luxa kept her hands on the table. Either she didn't think he was the warrior, or she wasn't allowed to vote. Probably both.
We believe you to be the warrior, said Vicus. If you call us to help you regain your father, then we answer your call.
They were going to help him. Who cared why? Okay, great, said Gregor. Whatever it takes. I mean, believe whatever you want, that's fine.
We must begin the journey with all haste, said Vicus.
I'm ready, said Gregor eagerly. Let me just get boots and we can go.
Ah, yes, the baby, said Solovet. And another round of arguments ensued.
Wait, shouted Vicus. This costs much time. Gregor, we do not know that the prophecy includes your sister.
What?
Said Gregor. He couldn't remember the prophecy very well. He had to ask Vicus if he could get in the room and read it again. The prophecy mentions 12 beings. Only 2 are described as Overlanders. You and your father fill that number, said Solovet.
The prophecy also speaks of one lost. That one may be your father, in which case Boots is the second Overlander, but it may also be a rat, said Vicus. The journey will be difficult. The prophecy warns that 4 of the 12 will lose life. It may be wisest to leave Boots here.
From around the table came a general murmur of assent. Gregor's head began to swim. Leave Boots? Leave her here and regale you with the Underlanders? He couldn't do that. It wasn't that he thought they'd mistreat her, but she'd be so lonely. And what if he and his dad didn't make it back? She'd never get home. Still, he knew how vicious the rats were, and they would be hunting him. To the last rat. He didn't know what to do.
He looked at the set faces and thought the Underlanders had already decided to split them up. Stay together. Wasn't that what his mom always told him when he took his sisters out? Stay together. Then he noticed Luxa was avoiding his gaze. She had intertwined her fingers on the stone table before her and was staring at them tensely. What would you do if it were your sister, Luxa? He asked. The room got very quiet. He could tell the council didn't want to hear her opinion. I have no sister, Overlander, said Luxa. Gregor felt disappointed. He heard a murmur of approval from some of the council members. Luxa's eyes flashed around the table and she scowled. But if I did and I were you, she said passionately, I would never take my eyes off her. He said, thank you, but he didn't think she could hear him in the loud round of objections that poured from the council. He raised his voice. If Boots doesn't go, I don't go. The room was in an uproar when a bat veered through the doorway and crashed into the table, silencing everyone. A ghostly woman slumped over the bat, pressed her hands to her chest to stem the flow of blood. One of the bat's wings folded in, but the other extended at an awkward angle, clearly broken.
Anshel is dead. Daphne is dead. The rats found Shed, Fanger. King Gorgor has launched his armies. They come for us, gasped the woman.
Vicus caught the woman as she collapsed. How many, Keda? He asked.
Many,
she whispered.
Many rats.
And she went limp. Chapter 12. Sound the alarm, shouted Vicus, and the place exploded in frantic activity. Horns began blowing, people rushed in and out, bats swooped in for orders and disappeared again without taking the time to land. Everyone ignored Gregor as they shifted into emergency mode. He wanted to ask Vicus what was going on. But the old man stood in the high hall in a blur of bat wings giving commands. Gregor went out on the balcony and could see Regalia swarming like a beehive. Many rats were coming. The Underlanders were going into defense mode. Suddenly, he realized they were at war. The terrifying thought and the height of the balcony made Gregor lightheaded. As he stumbled back inside, a strong hand caught his arm. Gregor the Overlander, prepare yourself, for we leave shortly, said Vicus. For where? Where are we going? Asked Gregor. To rescue your father, said Vicus. Now? We can go with the rats attacking? Said Gregor. I mean, there's a war starting, right? Not any war. We believe it is the war foretold in the Prophecy of Grey. The one that may bring about the complete annihilation of our people, said Vicus. Pursuing the quest for your father is our best hope of surviving it, said Vicus. I can take Boots, right? Asked Gregor. I mean, I'm taking her, he corrected himself. Yes, Boots shall come, said Vicus. What should I do? You said to prepare myself, asked Gregor. Vicus thought for a second and called Marith over. Take him to the museum. Let him choose whatever he thinks may aid him on the journey. Ah, here is the delegation from Troy, said Vicus. He stepped into another storm of wings. Gregor ran after Marith, who had sprinted for the door. Three staircases and several halls later, they arrived at a large chamber filled with loaded shelves. Here is that which has fallen from the overland. Remember, what you choose you must carry, instructed Marith, thrusting a leather bag with a drawstring into his hands. The shelves were filled with everything from baseballs to car tires. Gregor wished he had time to go through the stuff more carefully. Some of it must have been hundreds of years old, but time was a luxury he didn't have. He tried to focus. What could he take that would help on the trip? What did he need most in the Underland? Light! He found a flashlight in working condition and collected batteries from every electrical thing he could find. Something else caught his eye. It was a hard hat, like construction workers wore. There was a built-in light on the front, so they could see in the inky tunnels beneath New York City. He grabbed the hat and crammed it on his head. "We must go," ordered Marith. "We must get your sister and take flight." Gregor turned to follow him, and then he saw it.
Root beer. An honest-to-goodness, unopened, only slightly dented can of root beer.
It looked pretty new. He knew it was an extravagance, that he should only take essentials, but he had to have it. It was his favorite drink. Plus, it made him think of home. He stuffed the can in his bag. The nursery was nearby. Gregor ran in and saw Boots sitting happily among three Underlander toddlers having a tea party. For a second, he almost changed his mind and left her there. Wouldn't she be safer here in the palace? But then he remembered the palace would soon be under siege by rats. Gregor knew he couldn't leave her to face that alone. Whatever happened, they would stay together. Dulcet quickly helped Gregor into a backpack and slid Boots inside. She fastened a small bundle to the base of the backpack. "Catch cloths," she said. "A few toys and some treats." "Thanks," said Gregor, grateful someone had thought of the practical side of traveling with Boots. "Fare you well, sweet Boots," said Dulcet. She kissed the baby's cheek.
"Bye-bye, Dulcie," said Boots. "See you soon."
That was what they always parted with at Gregor's house. "Don't worry, I'll be back. I'll see you soon."
"Yes, I will see you soon," said Dulcet.
But her eyes filled with tears. "Take care, Dulcet," said Gregor, giving her hand an awkward shake.
"Fly you high, Gregor the Overlander," she said.
In the high hall, the mission was readying for departure. Several bats had lit on the ground and were being loaded with supplies. Gregor saw Henry hugging a painfully thin teenage girl goodbye. She was weeping uncontrollably, despite his attempts to comfort her.
"The dreams, brother," she sobbed. "They have worsened. Some terrible evil awaits you."
"Do not distress yourself, Nerissa. I have no plans to die," said Henry soothingly.
"There are evils beyond death," said his sister. "Fly you high, Henry. Fly you high."
They embraced, and Henry swung up onto his velvety black bat. Gregor watched nervously as the girl came his way. He could never think of the right things to say when people cried. But she had pulled herself together by the time she'd reached him. She held out a small roll of paper.
"For you, Overlander," she said. "Fly you high."
And before he could answer, she had moved away, leaning on the wall for support. He opened the paper, which wasn't paper but some sort of dried animal skin, and saw that "The Prophecy of Grey" had been carefully written upon it. "That's so weird," thought Gregor. He had been wishing he could read it again, to maybe figure more of it out. He had meant to ask Vicus, but had forgotten in the rush. "How did she know I wanted this?" he murmured to Boots. "Nerissa knows many things. She has the gift," said a boy, mounting a golden bat beside him. On second glance, Gregor realized it was Luxa, but her hair had been cropped off close to her head. "What happened to your hair?" asked Gregor, stuffing the prophecy in his pocket. "Long locks are dangerous in battle," said Luxa, carelessly. "That's too bad. I mean, it looks good short, too," said Gregor quickly. Luxa burst out laughing. "Gregor the Overlander, think you my beauty is of any matter in such times?" Gregor's face felt hot with embarrassment. "That's not what I meant." Luxa just shook her head at Henry, who was grinning back at her. "The Overlander speaks true, cousin. You look like a shorn sheep." "All the better," said Luxa, "for who would attack a sheep?"
"Baa!"
said Boots.
"Baa!"
and Henry laughed so hard he almost fell off his bat.
"Sheep says ba,"
Boots said defensively, which set him off again. Gregor almost laughed too. For a moment, he had felt as if he were among friends. But these people had a long way to go before he could consider them friends. To cover his slip, he concentrated on finding a comfortable way to carry his leather bag that would leave his hands free. He tied it to the side strap of the pack. When he glanced up, he found Luxa looking at him curiously. "What wear you on your head, Overlander?" she asked. "It's a hard hat, with a light," said Gregor. He flicked it on and off to show her. He could tell she was itching to try it, but she didn't want to ask. Gregor quickly weighed his options in his head. True, they weren't friends, but it was better to get along with her if he could. He needed her to get his dad. Gregor held out the hat. "Here, check it out." Luxa tried to appear indifferent, but her fingers worked the light switch eagerly. "How do you keep the light inside without air? Does it not get hot on your head?" she asked. "It runs on a battery. It's electricity. And there's a layer of plastic between the light and your head. You can try it on if you want," said Gregor. Without hesitation, Luxa popped the hat on her head. "Ficus has told me of electricity," she said. She shot the beam of light around the room before returning it to Gregor reluctantly. "Here, you must save your fuel."
"You will begin a new fashion," said Henry cheerfully.
He grabbed one of the small stone torches off the wall and laid it on top of his head. Flames seemed to be shooting out of his forehead.
"What think you, Luxa?" he asked, showing her his profile with exaggerated haughtiness.
"Your hair is alight,"
she suddenly gasped and pointed. Henry dropped the torch and beat at his hair as Luxa went into hysterics. Realizing it was a joke, Henry caught her in a headlock and rubbed her short hair with his knuckles while she laughed helplessly. For a minute, they could have been a couple of kids in the Overland, just a brother and sister, like Gregor and Lizzie, wrestling around. Ficus strode across the hall.
"You two are in a merry mood, considering we are at war," he said with a frown as he vaulted onto his bat.
"It is only an excess of spirit, Ficus," said Henry, releasing Luxa.
"Save your spirit. You will have need of it where we are going. Ride you with me, Gregor," said Ficus, extending a hand.
Gregor swung up behind him on his big, gray bat. Boots kicked his sides with anticipation.
"Me ride too, me too," she chirped.
"Mount up," called Ficus,
and Henry and Luxa leaped onto their bats. Gregor could spot Solovet and Marith preparing to leave also. Marith was riding a bat he hadn't seen before. Probably his other bat was still recovering. "To the air," ordered Solovet, and the five bats lifted off in a V formation. As they rose up in the air, Gregor felt like he would burst from excitement and happiness. They were going to get his dad. They would rescue him and take him home, and his mother would smile, really smile again. And there would be holidays to celebrate, not to dread, and music, and he was getting ahead of himself. He was breaking his rule right and left, and in a minute he would stop, but for that minute, he would go ahead and imagine as much as he wanted. As they veered sideways over the city of Regalia, Gregor was reminded of the gravity of their task by the manic activity below. The gates to the stadium were being fortified with huge stone slabs. Wagons of food clogged the roads. People carrying children and bundles were hurrying toward the palace. Extra torches were being lit in all quarters, so the city looked almost bathed in sunlight.
"Wouldn't you want it darker if there's going to be an attack?" asked Gregor.
"No, but the rats would. We need our eyes to fight. They do not," said Ficus. "Most of the creatures in the Underland, the crawlers, the bats, the fish, they have no need of light. We humans are lost without it."
Gregor tucked that bit of information away in his brain.
The flashlight had been the best thing to bring after all. The city quickly gave way to farmland, and Gregor had his first glimpse of how the Underlanders fed themselves. Great fields of some kind of grain grew under row upon row of hanging white lamps. "What runs the lamps?" asked Gregor.
"They burn with gas from the earth. Your father was most impressed with our fields. He suggested a plan for lighting our city, too, but at the moment, all light must go for food," said Vicus.
"Did an overlander show you how to do that?" asked Gregor.
"Gregor, we did not leave our mines in the overland when we fell. We have inventors just as you do, and light is most precious to us. Think you we poor underlanders might not have stumbled upon some manner of harnessing it ourselves?" said Vicus good-naturedly.
Gregor felt sheepish. He had sort of thought of the Underlanders as backward. They still used swords and wore funny clothes. But they weren't stupid. His dad said even the cavemen had geniuses among them. Somebody had thought up the wheel.
Solovet flew parallel to them, but she was deep in conversation with a pair of bats that had joined the party. She uncurled a large map on her bat's back and scrutinized it.
"Is she trying to find where my dad is?" Gregor asked Vicus.
"She is forming a plan of attack," said Vicus. "My wife leads our warriors. She goes with us not to direct the quest, but to gauge the level of support we may expect from our allies."
"Really? I thought you were in charge." "Well, you and Luxa," he said, because really, he couldn't tell how that all worked out. Luxa seemed able to order people around, but she could still get in trouble for stuff.
"Luxa will ascend the throne when she turns 16. Until then, Regalia is ruled by the council. I am but a humble diplomat who spends his spare time trying to teach prudence to the royal youth." "You see how well I succeed," Vicus said wryly.
He glanced at Henry and Luxa, who were flipping wildly in the sky, trying to knock each other off their bats.
"Do not let Solovet's gentle demeanor fool you. In the planning of battles, she is more cunning and wily than a rat."
"Wow," said Gregor. Her gentle demeanor had fooled him. Gregor shifted his weight on the bat, and something poked his leg. He pulled the prophecy Nerissa had given him from his pocket and unrolled it. Maybe now would be a good time to ask Vicus some questions. "So, do you think you could explain this gray prophecy to me?"
"The prophecy of gray," corrected Vicus. "What of it puzzles you?"
"Well, the whole thing," thought Gregor. But he said, "Maybe we could just go through it a piece at a time." He studied the poem. "Beware, Underlanders. Time hangs by a thread." Well, that seemed pretty clear. It was a warning. "The hunters are hunted. White water runs red." He asked Vicus to unravel the second line.
"The rats are traditionally the hunters of the Underland, for they would happily track and kill the rest of us. Last night, we hunted them to save you. So the hunters were hunted. White water ran red when we left their bodies to the river."
"Oh," said Gregor. Something was bothering him, but he couldn't put his finger on it. "The gnawers will strike to extinguish the rest." "Are the gnawers the rats?" he asked.
"Exactly so," said Vicus.
"The hope of the hopeless resides in a quest. The quest to get his dad. So he'd escaped. The Underlanders had saved him, and now they were at war and off on the quest. Gregor suddenly knew what was bothering him. "So this whole thing is my fault?" he said. "It never would have happened if I hadn't tried to escape?" He thought of the approaching army of rats. What had he done?
"No, Gregor. Put that from your mind," said Vicus firmly. "You are but one player in a very long and difficult tale. The prophecy of Gray trapped you, as it trapped us, long ago."
Gregor was silent. He didn't exactly feel better.
"Read on," said Vicus,
and Gregor's head drooped to the page. The lights of Regalia had faded away, and he had to squint to read by the faint torchlight. "An overland warrior, a son of the sun, may bring us back light. He may bring us back none. But gather your neighbors and follow his call, or rats will most surely devour us all." "So you say this next part is about me?" he said unhappily.
"Yes. You are the overland warrior, for obvious reasons," said Vicus,
although Gregor didn't think the reasons were too obvious.
"You are a son of the sun, as an overlander, but also the son who seeks his father. This is the sort of comedic wordplay Sandwich delighted in."
"Yeah, he was a funny guy," said Gregor glumly.
"Ha ha. Now the lines that follow are most gray," said Vicus. "Sandwich could never clearly see if in fact you succeed in bringing back light, or if you fail. But he most adamantly insisted we attempt the venture, or die by the rat's teeth."
"Well, that's not too inspiring," said Gregor. But for the first time, Sandwich had struck a chord with him. The possibility that Gregor might fail made the whole prophecy more plausible. "What sort of light am I supposed to bring back?" asked Gregor. "Is there a sacred torch or something?"
"That is a metaphor. By light, Sandwich means life. If the rats can truly extinguish our light, they extinguish our life as well," said Vicus.
"A metaphor?" Gregor thought an actual torch would be easier to bring back. How could he bring back some metaphor thing he didn't really understand? "That could be tricky," he said. He read on. "Two over, two under, of royal descent. Two flyers, two crawlers, two spinners, ascent." "What are all those twos about?" asked Gregor.
"That tells us whom we must persuade to accompany us on the quest. We are proceeding as if the two over are you and your sister. Two under, of royal descent, are Luxa and Henry. Henry's sister, Nerissa, as you might have gleaned, was not a possible choice. Flyers are bats. Crawlers are cockroaches. Spinners are spiders. We go now to assemble our neighbors in the order that the prophecy dictates. First, the bats."
The number of bats had been increasing as they flew. Henry led the party into a vast cave. Gregor gave a little jump when he realized the ceiling was bumpy with hundreds and hundreds of hanging bats. "But don't we already have bats?" asked Gregor.
"We need official permission to take them on the quest," said Vicus.
"Also, there are matters of war to discuss." A towering cylinder of stone sat in the center of the cave. Its sides were as slick as those of the palace, on the round. Flat top, a group of bats waited. Vicus turned back to Gregor and whispered, "We humans know you to be the warrior, but other creatures may have doubts. Whoever you think you may or may not be, it is essential that our neighbors believe you are the one." Gregor was trying to unwind that in his head when they landed next to the bats on the huge pillar of stone. The humans all dismounted. Deep bows and greetings followed on both sides. One particularly impressive, silvery white bat appeared to be in charge.
"Queen Athena," Vicus said, and presented him. "Meet you, Gregor the Overlander."
"Be you the warrior? Be you he who calls?" asked the bat in a soft purr.
"Well, actually, I..."
Gregor saw Vicus frown and pulled up short. He'd been about to go into his spiel about how he wasn't the warrior, but then what?
Vicus had whispered something about others believing he was the one. There was a war beginning. The bats weren't likely to send off valuable flyers on a wild goose chase. If he denied he was the warrior now, the quest would be called off, and his father would be as good as dead. That sealed it. Gregor stood up straight and tried to control the quaver that slipped into his voice. I am the warrior. I am he who calls. The bat was still for a moment, then nodded. It is he. She spoke with such certainty that for a second, Gregor succeeded in thinking of himself as a warrior, a bold, brave, powerful warrior that the Underlanders would tell stories about for centuries. He could almost see himself leading a squadron of bats into battle, stunning the rats, saving the Underland from...
Geeko, I pee,
announced Boots. And there he stood, a boy in a goofy hard hat with a beat-up flashlight and a bunch of batteries he hadn't even tested to see if they still had juice. The mighty warrior excused himself and changed a diaper.
Chapter 13. Vikas and Solovet arranged to have some sort of private war meeting with the bats.
Do you need me to go along? Asked Gregor.
It was less that he thought he could contribute to the meeting and more that he felt safer when Vikas was around. Being stranded on top of a tall pillar surrounded by hundreds of bats made him a little uncomfortable. And who would be in charge if anything came up?
Luxa? Well, that was no good.
No, thank you, Gregor. We will be discussing battle position for our forces, not the efforts of the quest. We shall not be absent long, said Vikas.
No problem, said Gregor. But inside, he wasn't so sure. Before they left, Vikas's big gray bat murmured something in Luke's ear. She smiled, looked at Gregor, and nodded.
Probably laughing at me saying I'm a warrior, thought Gregor.
But that was not it. Euripides says you're bruising his sides, said Luxa. He wants me to teach you to ride. That bothered Gregor. He thought he'd been doing pretty well for a first-timer. What's he mean I'm bruising his sides? You hold on too strongly with your legs. You must trust the bats. They will not drop you, said Luxa. It is the first lesson we teach the babies.
Huh? Said Gregor.
Luxa had a way of putting him down even when she wasn't trying.
It is easier for the babies, said Marith quickly. Like your sister, they have not yet learned much fear.
We have a saying down here. Courage only counts when you can count. Can you count, Boots?
Marith held his fingers up before Boots, who was busy trying to tug off Gregor's sandal. 1, 2, 3.
Boots grinned and held up her pudgy fingers in imitation.
No, me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 10,
she said, and lifted both hands in the air at her accomplishment. Henry scooped up Boots and held her at arm's length, the way someone might hold a wet puppy. Boots has no fear, nor will she when she masters counting. You like to fly, do you not, Boots? Go for a ride on the bat? He said mischievously.
I ride, said Boots, and wiggled to get out of Henry's uncomfortable hold.
Then ride you, said Henry, and tossed her right off the side of the pillar. Gregor gasped as he saw Boots, as if in slow motion, sail out of Henry's hands and into the dark. Henry, said Marith in shock, but Luxa was cracking up.
Gregor staggered to the side of the pillar and squinted into the darkness. The faint torchlight provided by the bats illuminated only a few yards. Had Henry really thrown Boots to her death? He couldn't believe it. He couldn't...
A happy squeal came from above his head.
More!
Boots! But what was she doing up there?
Gregor fumbled with his flashlight. The beam was strong and cut a wide swath of light around the blackness. 20 bats were wheeling around the cave, playing some kind of game of catch with Boots. One would take her up high and flip over, sending the toddler free-falling to the ground. But long before she reached it, another bat would scoop her up gently, only to rise and flip her off again.
Boots was giggling ecstatically.
More! More!
She ordered the bats each time she landed. And each time they dropped her,
Gregor's stomach lurched into his throat.
"Stop it," he snapped at the Underlanders.
Henry and Luxa looked surprised. Either no one had ever yelled at these royal brats, or they hadn't seen Gregor lose his temper yet. He grabbed Henry by the front of his shirt.
"Bring her in now."
Henry could probably cream him, but he didn't care. Henry put up his hands in mock surrender. "Take ease, Overlander. She is not in danger," he said, grinning.
"In truth, Gregor, she is safer with the bats than in human hands," said Luxa. "And she is not afraid."
"She's too," screamed Gregor, wheeling on her. "She's going to think she can jump off anything and be caught."
"She can," said Luxa, not seeing the problem.
"Not at home, Luxa. Not in the Overland," said Gregor. "And I don't plan on staying in this creepy place forever." They may not have known exactly what he meant by creepy, but it was pretty clear it was an insult. Luxa raised her hand, and a bat coasted by lightly, flipping Boots into Gregor's arms. He caught her and squeezed her tightly. The Underlanders were no longer laughing.
"What means this creepy?" said Luxa coolly.
"Never mind," said Gregor. "It's just something we Overlanders say when we see our baby sisters being tossed around by bats. See, for us, that's creepy."
"It was meant to be entertaining," said Henry.
"Oh yeah, you guys should open a theme park. You'll have a line stretched from here to the surface," said Gregor. Now they really had no idea what he was saying, but his tone was so sarcastic they couldn't miss it.
Boots wriggled from his arms and ran toward the edge of the pillar.
"More Gigo," she piped.
"No, Boots. No jump," said Gregor, catching her just in the nick of time. "See? This is just what I'm talking about," he said to Luxa.
He stuffed Boots into the pack and heaved her onto his back. The Underlanders were baffled by his anger and stung by his tone, even if they couldn't understand his words.
"Well, it was not Boots who needed the lessons anyway," said Luxa. "It was you."
"Oh, abandon the thought, Luxa," Henry sneered. "The Overlander would never give himself to the bats. Why, when he returns home, he may forget he is no longer in our creepy land and jump from his own roof."
Luxa and Henry gave an unfriendly laugh. Marith just looked embarrassed. Gregor knew it was a dare, and one part of him itched to take it.
"Just run and jump into the darkness and leave the rest up to the bats."
Another part of him didn't want to play this little game. Luxa and Henry wanted him to leap so they could laugh at him flailing around in the air. He guessed they both hated being ignored, though, so he gave them a look of contempt and walked away.
He could feel Luxa positively steaming behind him.
"I could have you thrown off the side, Overlander, and have no one to answer to," said Luxa.
"So do it," said Gregor, holding out his arms. He knew it was a lie. She'd have Vicus to answer to.
Luxa bit her lip in vexation.
"Oh, let the warrior be, Luxa," said Henry. "He is no good to us dead. Yet. And even the bats may not be able to compensate for his clumsiness. Come, I will race you to the pitch pool."
She hesitated for a moment, then ran for the edge. She and Henry launched into the air like a pair of beautiful birds and vanished, presumably on their bats.
Gregor stood there, hands on his hips, hating them.
He had forgotten Marith was behind him.
"You must not take what they say to heart," said Marith softly.
Gregor turned and saw the conflict on Marith's face. They were both kinder as children, but when the rats took their parents, they changed.
"The rats killed Henry's parents too?" said Gregor.
"Some years before Luxa's. Henry's father was the king's younger brother. After the Overlanders, the rats would most like to see the royal family dead," said Marith. "When they were killed, Nerissa became as frail as glass, Henry as hard as stone."
Gregor nodded. He could never hate people very long because he always ended up finding out something sad about them that he had to factor in.
like this kid at school everybody hated because he was always pushing little kids around. And then one day, they found out his dad had hit him so much, he was in the hospital. With stuff like that, all Gregor could feel was bad. When Vikas arrived a few minutes later, Gregor got onto his bat without a word. As they took off, he realized how tightly his legs clutched at the bat's sides and tried to loosen up. Vikas rode with his legs swinging free. Gregor let his legs go and found it was actually easier to stay on, more balanced.
"Now we must visit the crawlers," said Vikas. "Do you wish to continue dissecting the prophecy?"
"Maybe later," Gregor answered. Vikas didn't press it. He probably had plenty on his mind with the war and all. Something else was eating at Gregor now that he had his temper under control. He knew he hadn't refused to jump off the pillar only to make Luxa and Henry mad. And it wasn't only because they'd laugh at him. No mystery why he'd mentioned theme parks. Roller coasters, bungee jumps, parachute drops. He hated them. He went on them sometimes, because everybody would think he was a chicken if he didn't. But they weren't fun. What was fun about feeling the world drop out from under your feet? And those rides at least had seat belts. Gregor hadn't jumped, because deep down, he was scared to, and everybody knew it.
Chapter 14. They flew through dark tunnels for hours. Gregor felt Boots's little head sink down on his shoulder, and he let her go. He couldn't let her nap too long during the day, or she'd wake up in the middle of the night wanting to play. But how could he keep her awake when it was dark and she couldn't move? He'd deal with it later. The gloom brought all Gregor's negative thoughts back. His dad imprisoned by rats, his mom crying, the dangers of taking Boots on this unknown voyage, and his own fear at the pillar. When he felt the bat coasting down for a landing, he was relieved at the distraction, although he disliked meeting up with Luxa and Henry again. He was sure they would be more smug and patronizing than ever. They dipped into a cavern that was so low the bat's wings brushed both the ceiling and floor. When they landed, Gregor dismounted but couldn't straighten up without bumping his hard hat. The place reminded him of a pancake, round and large and flat. He could see why the cockroaches had chosen it. The bats couldn't fly well, and the humans and rats couldn't fight properly with 4-foot-high ceilings. He roused Boots, who seemed to enjoy her new surroundings. She toddled around, standing on tiptoe to touch the ceiling with her fingers. Everyone else just sat on the ground and waited. The bats hunched over, twitching at what Gregor supposed were sounds he couldn't even hear. A delegation of roaches appeared and bowed low. The humans got to their knees and bowed back. So Gregor did the same. Not one to stand on ceremony, Boots ran up with her arms extended in greeting.
"Bugs! Big bugs!" she cried.
A happy murmur ran through the group of roaches.
"Be she, Princess, be she? Be she the one, Temp, be she?"
Boots singled out one roach in particular and patted it between the antennas.
"Hi, you go ride, we go ride."
"Knows me, the princess knows me," said the roach in awe,
and all the other roaches gave little gasps. Even the humans and bats exchanged looks of surprise.
"We go ride, more ride," said Boots.
"Big bug, take Boots ride,"
she said, patting him more vigorously on the head. "Gentle, Boots," said Gregor, hurrying to catch her hand. He placed it softly on the bug's head. "Be gentle, like with puppy dogs."
"Oh, gentle, gentle," said Boots, lightly bouncing her palm on the roach. It quivered with joy. "Knows me, the princess knows me," the roach whispered. "Recalls she the ride, does she?"
Gregor peered closely at the roach. "Oh, are you the one who carried her to the stadium?" he asked. The roach nodded in assent.
"I be Temp, I be,"
he said. Now Gregor knew what all the fuss was about. To his eyes, Temp looked exactly like the other 20 roaches sitting around. How on earth could Boots have picked him out of the crowd? Vicus looked at him with raised eyebrows, as if asking for an explanation, but Gregor could only shrug in reply. It was pretty weird.
"More ride," pleaded Boots.
Temp fell on his face reverently, and she clambered onto his back. For a minute, everybody just watched them pattering around the chamber. Then Vicus cleared his throat.
"Crawlers, we have grave matters to place before you. Take us to your king, take us."
The roaches reluctantly tore themselves away from watching Boots and led Vicus and Solovet away.
"Oh, great," thought Gregor. "Here we are again."
He felt even less comfortable than when Vicus had left the first time. Who knew what Henry and Luxa might do now? And then there was the matter of the giant roaches. He didn't feel particularly safe in the bug's land. Just yesterday, they had considered trading him, and Boots, to the rats. Well, at least there was Marith, who seemed decent enough, and the bats weren't too bad. Temp and one other roach named Tick had stayed behind. They completely ignored the rest of the party while they took turns giving the toddler rides. The five bats gathered together in a clump and fell asleep, exhausted from the day's flight. Marith placed the torches together to make a small fire and put on some food to warm. Henry and Luxa sat apart, speaking in low voices, which was fine with Gregor. Marith was the only one he felt like talking to anyway.
"So, can you tell the crawlers apart, Marith?" asked Gregor.
He dumped all his batteries on the ground to sort out the dead ones while they talked.
"No. It is most rare that your sister can. Among us are few that can make distinctions. Vicus is better than most. But to pick one from so many, it is passing strange," said Marith.
"Perhaps it is a gift of the Overlanders," he suggested.
"No, they all look identical to me," said Gregor.
Boots was really good at those games where they gave you four pictures that looked alike, except one had a tiny difference. Like there were four party hats, and one had seven stripes instead of six. And if they were all drinking from paper cups, she always knew whose was whose, even if they got mixed up on the table together. Maybe every roach really did look distinctly different to her.
Gregor opened up the flashlight. It took two D-size batteries. He swapped the other batteries in and out, trying to determine which ones still had power. As he worked, he inadvertently flipped the switch on when the flashlight was pointing at Luxa and Henry. They jumped, unaccustomed to sudden bursts of light. He did it a couple more times, on purpose, which was childish, but he liked seeing them flinch. They'd last about 5 seconds in New York City, he thought. That made him feel a little better. Of the 10 batteries, all but two still had juice. Gregor opened up the compartment on his hat and found it ran on some special rectangular battery. Not having any replacements, he would have to use it sparingly. Maybe I should save this for last. If I lose the others or they go dead, I'll still have this on my head, he thought. He clicked off the light on the hat. Gregor put the good batteries back in his pocket and set the other two aside.
These two are duds, he said to Marith. They don't work.
Shall I burn them? Asked Marith, reaching for the batteries.
Gregor caught his wrist before he could toss them in the flames.
No, they might explode. He didn't really know what would happen if you put a battery in the fire, but he had a vague memory of his dad saying it was a dangerous thing to do. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught Luxa and Henry exchanging uneasy glances.
You could blind yourself, he added just for effect.
Well, that might happen if they exploded.
Marith nodded and gingerly set the dead batteries back by Gregor. He rolled them around with his sandal, making Luxa and Henry nervous. But when he saw that Marith looked nervous too, he stuck the duds in his pocket. Vikas and Solovet returned just as the food was ready. They looked worried. Everyone gathered around as Marith passed out fish, bread, and something that reminded Gregor of a sweet potato, but wasn't. "Boots, dinner time," said Gregor, and she ran over. When she realized they weren't following, she turned her head and waved impatiently to the roaches.
"Temp! Tikka! Dinner!"
An awkward social moment. No one else had thought to invite the roaches. Marith had not prepared enough food. Clearly, it wasn't standard to dine with roaches. Fortunately, they shook their heads.
"No, princess, we eat not now."
They started to scurry away.
"Stay there," said Boots, pointing at Temp and Tick. "You stay there, big bugs."
And the roaches obediently sat down. "Boots," said Gregor, embarrassed. "You don't have to stay. She orders everybody around," he told the roaches. "It's just she wants to keep playing with you, but she has to eat first."
"We will sit," said one stiffly,
and Gregor had the feeling the bug wanted him to mind his own business. Everyone ate hungrily except Vikas, who seemed distracted. "So when leave we?" asked Henry through a mouthful of fish. "We do not," said Solovet. "The crawlers have refused to come." Luke's head snapped up indignantly. "Refused? On what grounds?" "They do not wish to invite the anger of King Gorgor by joining our quest," said Vikas. "They have peace with both humans and rats now. They do not want to unseat it."
Now what? Thought Gregor.
They needed two roaches. It said so in The Prophecy of Grey. If the roaches didn't come, could they still rescue his father?
"We have asked them to rethink the proposition," said Solovet. "They know the rats are on the march. This may sway them in our direction."
"Or in the rats," muttered Luxa,
and Gregor secretly agreed. The roaches had debated trading overlanders to the rats even when they knew the rats would eat them, and that was yesterday, when there was no war. If Boots hadn't been so appealing, no doubt they would be dead now. The roaches weren't fighters. Gregor thought they would do what was best for their species, and the rats were probably the stronger ally. Or they would be, if you could trust them.
"What makes the roaches think they can believe the rats?" asked Gregor.
"The crawlers do not think in the same manner we do," said Vikas.
"How do they think?" asked Gregor.
"Without reason or consequence," Henry broke in angrily. "They are the stupidest of creatures in the Underland. Why, they can barely even speak."
"Silence, Henry," said Vikas sharply.
Gregor glanced back at Temp and Tick, but the roaches gave no sign they had heard. Of course they had. The roaches didn't seem too bright, but it was just rude to say it in front of them. Besides, that wasn't going to make them want to come along.
"Remember you, when Sandwich arrived in the Underland, the crawlers had been here for countless generations. No doubt they will remain when all thought of warm blood has passed," said Vikas.
"That is a rumor," said Henry dismissively. "No, it's not. Cockroaches have been around like 350 million years, and people haven't even been here 6, said Gregor. His dad had showed him a timeline of when different animals had evolved on Earth. He remembered being impressed by how old cockroaches were.
"How do you know this?" Luxa spoke abruptly, but Gregor could tell she was actually interested.
"It's science. Archaeologists dig up fossils and stuff, and they can tell how old things are. Cockroaches, I mean crawlers, are really old, and they've never changed much," said Gregor. He was getting on shaky ground here, but he thought that was true. "They're pretty amazing." He hoped Temp and Tick were listening. Vikas smiled at him.
"For a creature to survive so long, it is no doubt as smart as it need be."
"I do not believe in your science," said Henry. "The crawlers are weak. They cannot fight. They will not last. That is how nature intended it."
Gregor thought of his grandma, who was old and dependent on the kindness of stronger people now. He thought of Boots, who was little and couldn't yet open a door. And there was his friend Larry, who had to go to the hospital emergency room 3 times last year when his asthma flared up and he couldn't get air into his lungs.
"Is that what you think, Luxa?" said Gregor. "Do you think something deserves to die if it's not strong?"
"It does not matter what I think, if that is the truth," said Luxa evasively.
"But is it the truth? That is an excellent question for the future ruler of Regalia to ponder," said Vicus.
They ate quickly, and Vicus suggested they all try to sleep. Gregor had no idea if it was night or not, but he felt tired and didn't object. While he spread out a thin, woven blanket at the edge of the chamber, Boots tried to teach Temp and Tick to play patty cake. The roaches waved their front legs in confusion, not understanding what was going on.
Pat cake, bake a man. Bake me cake, fast you can. Pat it, pick it, mark with a B. Put in oven for Big Bug and me,"
sang Boots as she clapped and touched the roach's feet. The bugs were completely baffled.
"What sings the princess? What sings?" asked Temp.
Or maybe it was Tick. "It's a song we sing with babies in the Overland," said Gregor. "She put you in it. That's a big honor," he said. "She only puts someone in a song if she really likes them."
"Me like Big Bug," said Boots with satisfaction, and sang the song again with the roaches.
"Sorry, guys, she has to sleep now," said Gregor. "Come on, Boots, sleepy time. Say goodnight."
Boots spontaneously hugged the roaches. "Night, Big Bug. Sleep tight."
Gregor was glad she left out, "Don't let the bed bugs bite." Gregor snuggled down with her under the blanket on the hard stone floor. After her long nap, she wasn't very sleepy. He let her play with the flashlight a while, clicking it on and off, but he was afraid she'd run down the batteries, and it was making the Underlanders restless. Finally, he got her to settle down and sleep. As he drifted off, he thought he heard Temp, or maybe it was Tick, whispering,
"Honors us. The princess honors us."
He didn't know what woke him. By the stiffness in his neck, he must have been lying on the hard floor for hours. He drowsily reached over to pull Boots' warm body next to him, but he found only cold stone. His eyes snapped open and he sat up. His lips parted to call her name as his vision came into focus. No sound came out. Boots was in the center of the big round chamber, rocking from foot to foot as she turned calmly in a circle. The flashlight she held illuminated the room in sections. He could see the figures stretching out in every direction in perfect concentric rings. They swayed in unison, some to the left, some to the right, with slow, mesmerizing movements. In total silence, hundreds of cockroaches were dancing around Boots.